So we had sketched out a little bit the basic possibilities as far as what hexokinesis could mean as far as the type of damage it could cause. And we mentioned that there are a number of likely ramifications and that we would start off going through some of them. One that we discussed last time was the question of mechila, the assumption that mechila is limited when we're dealing with personal suffering, and that mechila exists, and again, we mean mechila before the fact, not mechila after the fact, that if you hurt somebody's feelings, you can ask for mechila afterwards, but mechila in terms of waiving one's rights, WAIV, waiving and saying you don't want them. So that is one thing when it comes to monetary rights. When it comes to issues of personal suffering, there are two possible problems, as we noted. One is that we don't know if the waiving is sincere. And even if it's sincere, we don't know if it's something you can hold someone to. That it could be that you thought you could handle it, then you can't. And therefore, it's not necessarily something that sticks. So we went through some aspects of that. So we noted that there are other areas where this is going to come up as well. And among them, the next issue to talk about is the question of chazaka. And the idea that should the landscape change, meaning both, I guess, the literal landscape and also just the legal landscape, should it change if there are facts on the ground, if there is a acceptance of a certain reality, just let's say a tacit acceptance of a certain reality, how much does that impact then? Justice.
The fact that you just said tacit acceptance for, like, money and the issue of the tacit acceptance.
You know, what constitutes acceptance? Is it being that it's tacit, but then what constitutes acceptance?
Yeah, right. Or even saying that it's tacit, like, you know, because
you
may have to be explicit.
Well, for the explicit, then we go back to the whole mechila discussion. Right now, the fact is, it's not totally separate from the mechila discussion. And as you've seen, the rush, which has been this rush from the days and also some involved, has been a mainstay of this topic from the beginning, but the Rosh and Siman Beis specifically does tie in the topic of Mechila and Chazaka together. It's definitely closely related, but if you was explicit, so that would seem to be basically a Mechila situation. But what about the fact that you've allowed a situation to endure? So this is something which is going to come up throughout Bava Basra, and it's important also just as a very brief introduction, because not even like an introduction to an introduction, but just the concept of chazaka in general. The word chazaka in Hebrew means a lot of different things. I think in Encyclopedia Talmudis they list 15 different applications of the term chazaka. But chazaka just in Bava Basra can mean a few different things. So it can mean essentially that I got here first. It can mean a certain type of kinyan, that you take possession of something with the consent of the other party who used to own it, and therefore it's an acquisition. It can mean establishing a reality by just letting something continue. And it can also be more of a proof. So, for example, God willing, hopefully by the end of the year, you'll have a little bit of exposure to Chetzke Sabatim, the Gemara that we've been referencing and the Samach from Chetzke Sabatim. But if you're familiar with the concept in general of what Chetzke Sabatim talks about, it's a well-known concept, but it's often not correctly understood, that it is pretty well-known that this idea that if you lived on land for 3 years, so then that can establish your ownership of the land. But what's important to appreciate in the context of the third parak is that it's not the living there that establishes the ownership. And that there is such a concept in general in secular law called squatter's rights or adverse possession. but that we're not talking about the living there creating the ownership. The assumption there is that there is some other fact that created the ownership. There was, say, a purchase for the land, but that we don't anymore have the proof of the purchase. We don't have the deed anymore. So there, it's a combination of two things. It's the fact that you claim to have purchased land, and your claim is supported by the fact that you were able to live there for 3 years without anyone coming and objecting. So if there was something missing about your claim, under normal circumstances, if you were just decided to move into someone's house for anything close to 3 years, and you didn't have the right to do so, so then the owner would probably say something at some point. So if you can survive for 3 years on a property without having a formal process of objection, so then it becomes a proof that you actually did legally possess it. So it's not the living there that creates the ownership, it's living there that's the proof of the ownership, which happened for some other reason, happened through some other process. So chazaka has different meanings in different contexts, just even within this mesachta, and even just within the context of this mesachta. So here, when we're talking potentially, and we'll have to also get into the sugya of chazkas tashmishim, which involves a lot of other details that we're not up to yet, but the notion of a chazaka in this context, what would it mean? That it would mean essentially something like a tacit mechila kind of thing, that we've allowed the situation to exist for a certain period of time. And therefore, maybe that establishes that we're okay with it. And that also gets into the question of minig. As you mentioned last time, basically these three issues are kind of different from each other, but all interrelated. Question of mechila, chazaka, minig, all kind of circle around these same issues. So to what extent can the premise of Hezekiah and all of its requirements be affected by these external factors?
I mean, could we also maybe chazaka, at least in terms of our discussion, is maybe also something like reasonability?
Okay,
explain. At a certain point, let's say before a certain point, it's unreasonable for you to have known that it's there. And we can't say that you necessarily have a chazaka one way or another, because how was I supposed to know? But at a later point, you could say, well, you know, it's been 3 years, like...
Yeah, and so that's definitely...
That's something, like...
Yeah, that's definitely a part, but you'll see when we see a little bit of chazaka sabbatim, and God willing, we should see as much as we can. But that's clearly a part of how you get to the 3 years in that context. But again, there, mentioning it also a little bit for contrast, because the chazaka of Chazkas Abatim is going to be different than here. Because there we're talking about the chazaka for the purpose of proof, to establish that you survived that objection, and therefore it probably is credible to say that you purchased it legitimately. And then you're right, so we have to figure out, you know, for some period of time, which is a big part of the three-year equation, you see from those Gemaras, and whether or not we get to all them, by the way, I certainly highly recommend trying to learn as much Bikiyas and Bavavatra as possible just to familiarize with these things and everything else connected to that. But, yeah, a big part of that is figuring out at what point does it become unreasonable to say he didn't know, and at what point is it... So that's a part of the equation. But it's a factor here as well, also, as we'll see, because the issue of when somebody objects or doesn't object is tied in to all kinds of other factors. So when somebody has a good reason why he wouldn't object, so then that undermines the ability to claim any kind of a chazaka. So in this context of whether a chazaka would make a difference, say the situation of a wall between two properties, so at least many to point to, but at least two major sources in the Rishonim who talk about this. One I gave you today, and one we just referenced. Right, so we have the Rush, and we have the, well, if you had a chance to see today, the Riff, who is quoted in a few places. Is actually quoted also by the Ramban at a chance to see a bit earlier. But today I showed you the Chiddushei Haran quote from the Tshuva of the Rif. also dealing with that question of chazaka. So how do they address it? So let's look together for a second at the Rush in Siman Beis. Same Rush we saw the end of last time. Right, so let's look at Rishutzpin Shechoku at the Chatzir. We'll open a call to Benayim. Be'achar Kamashonim. So let's say it's been a little while. They've lived without the wall for a while. And after many years, Tazo Hayacha lived most close to Benayim. So one of them says, you know, we should really get around to building this wall. I think it's time. I've been enduring this for too long. Let's put up a wall now. And let's share the expenses and everything associated with it. So Vishikanegdo towing, and the other one claims, ha, he named Machal Salio has degree, Shani Mazikapa. Right, and use the mochel on this hezek that I'm officially causing you. Vinasatali or Macharsali, Bathaki Bokamashanin, or maybe you'll claim that there was an official process of Mechira, and the fact that I've endured is proof in a similar sense, like the Chesed Habakim sense. So, what if you claim such a thing? So, Ein Tanos Taina, no good. Your claim that there was a official, either this is the proof of, or this constitutes, the Mechila is not accepted. Why? V'lo Shayach Kan Chazaka. And you cannot apply here the concept of chazaka. The time of the chazaka, what's the whole logic of chazaka? Hainu kevan de shasak v'lo micha hifzid. The whole reason is that since you were quiet and you didn't object, so you lose out. So hainu that reason, hainu davka hecha shaham machzik hu mazik zeinonizot. So if the one who wants to make the claim, if he is the potential harmful agent and not receiving any correlating damage to himself, right, what would be an example of that? Kigon, Mishiyesh Lachalon Pasuach Lachachachavero. Let's say somebody has a window that is open to his friend's courtyard. The Hexik by Shaloshanim, and he endured like this for 3 years. Aval Hachamatu Lameimar, but here in a case like this, where it's mutual. Whatever is happening to one, it's happening from him and vice versa. So, you could say, why was it my job to make a fuss about this? This was a situation that was going on in both directions. So I was doing the same thing to you that you're doing to me. So I figure, okay, one of us is going to get around to bringing it up first. I thought you would. But it doesn't mean necessarily that either of us is mochel. Then he adds on, v'od, the lo dami hai hezek lezeke d'chalom, that it's not comparable to the hezek of the window. So hasam lav hezek tadirhu, because there, it's not a ongoing hezek. Shachalon osu l'ora, because the purpose of a window is really for light. And it's not there for you to look out into your friend's courtyard. You're not supposed to, it's forbidden. Like the Gemara says regarding the garden. But in a normal courtyard, people are going out. So it's impossible to avoid that things are going to be seen. So that is comparable to the impact of the smoke and of the bathroom. As the Gemara says, the second paragraph, less the chazaka. That no one can ever say, okay, I have a hold on this. So therefore, nothing doing. He has still this obligation, and it still continues to be his responsibility. And then he goes on to say the parts we spoke about last time, we picked up from there, it says, but if there are actual witnesses that there was Mechila, that's a different story. So essentially, what undermines the Chazaka here, according to the Rush? Yeah, Levy?
I guess people are getting damaged.
Right, and since both people are getting damaged, therefore, what is that?
Therefore, it's listed. There's no like a sort of like extra obligation on either one of them to bring it up first.
Right, and therefore there's no expectation. My silence is not meaningful.
Yes.
Because I keep thinking, okay, one of us will get around to it, and I'm not not just allowing this to happen. All right?
What about the situation of the fact that it's a continuous heaven as opposed to the Chalom? Like, if anything, it's like the Chalom has a better chance of not having Chazukah, because maybe I just didn't notice that was being offered, that it is a constant one, and I really should have noticed and said something.
Oh, what about that? So it seems to be a good point, right? So the fact that it's constant, does it make it better or worse?
I don't know.
Because that
it seems to be that might be worse.
Right, it would seem like it, right? So essentially that seems to be what the Rif is saying. Right? So the Rif's question that the Ran quotes and that the Ramban quotes, and essentially the Ramban interprets it this way, basically what the Rif seems to be saying, is that why does the Mishnah, if you recall the whole back and forth in the Gemara, so the Gemara says, Gemara is trying to figure out the language of the Mishnah when it says Ratsu. Does Ratsu mean to be split up, in which case they're obligated to make a wall? Or does it mean they chose to make a wall? And the Gemara connects it to the question of whether Hezek or Iyaz Shmei Hezek or not. The assumption being that if it is Hezek, then they have to make a wall. And if it's not Hezek, so then they have the option of making the wall. So asks the Rif, well, why do we say that if it is Hezek, they're obligated to make a wall? Maybe it is Hezek, and they were Hezek like this already. They already endured it for a while, and therefore they basically accepted the lack of a wall. So yes, Hezek Riyah is a reality, but there's a chazakah between themselves to not have the wall. So his answer is essentially that, like you're saying, that it's an ongoing reality of the Hezek, and it's not something that is given to the chazakah. So how do you understand this factor? So one way to understand it is, like we would say last time, connecting it to the whole Mechila issue, that it's all about how we perceive the nature of Hezek Riyah. That if it's a monetary issue purely, so then it should be subject to the general Chazakah rule. But if it's an issue of personal pain, so then that doesn't necessarily have the same susceptibility to Mechila and Chazaka and related concepts, and therefore shouldn't be possible. So one could say that this is the entire issue in the Rishonim, whether Chazaka works or not, how do you perceive the nature of Hezek Riyah? Now, one thing I should mention for Chazara purposes, Kedai to see, you know, that this whole question of the nature of what Hezek Riyah is something that's discussed in countless forums all over the place. But if you want to see one very concise, straightforward presentation, the Stipler, the Kilos Yaakov from Bava Basra, in one of the early Simanim, hey, Rav around there, it talks about Hezek Riyah in the title. He basically has a very concise treatment where he goes through the three possibilities and this issue of Chazaka, and he understands it like that, that essentially that it's all going to come down to this question of whether it's monetary or personal. And he notes there, like we noted last time, that in the context of Purim, you have this debate that we find the language that Minig can establish a Ptur for Purim purposes, that if you're celebrating on Purim and there's some type of hezek, so then on a minor level, I just feel it's important to give the caveat so no one runs away with this, but that there's a theoretically, I'll just emphasize theoretically for now, that theoretically there is a minig to exempt damages on Purim. And the Magen Avraham qualifies the language of the Ramah to say specifically Mamono, but not Gufo. So that people may decide, L'chatzila, to suspend their property rights for a certain purpose by mutual agreement, but not their bodily rights. But they connect.
But you could also say, like, on cooking, really people should be punished from you know, stabbing somebody in the back of the neck with their lula. So that's, you know, the known thing that it happens during Hoshana.
Well, it depends on by stabbing them in the back, by stabbing them in the neck, because there is reality to that. Like, we referenced that a little bit last time, that it is true, you know, that, like we mentioned, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that on Erev Shabbos, there's a different level of responsibility for Nezek. And the Gemara calls it Ras Bereshus. You know, the person is running around with permission. And we discussed that creates a little bit of a maybe dangerously misleading impression, because you get the impression that, okay, mitzvah is a get-out-of-jail-free card. So if one can claim that they were involved in a mitzvah, so then that will get them off the hook for the damage that they cause when they're running around for mitzvah. So that's very dangerous. As one contemporary mechaber wrote, everyone's going to have to walk around in body armor because maybe somebody's on the way to a shir or a bris or who knows what. Hard to believe that that's okay. So rather, what we mean is that when the environment is such that everybody is sharing in an expectation, then that changes the landscape. So yes, it is true that somebody is very sensitive to lulav contact, then they have to pick the more socially distant minion for Hoshanas. You know, that it is true that you're entering into an environment where there's a little bit more self-protection. So, you know, it's not completely out of bounds to say that, but, you know, it all depends on the facts of every situation. So that's how many achronim assume. And again, the stipler would be a great place to look if you want a brief and direct summary of this issue. So he portrays it that way, as do many other achronim. But I'd like to also share with you the Torah of a great Yehuda Shechiva, who you never met because he's before your time. But it was before my time also, before the time of Paul Meyer Bain, before the time of Soloveitchik. But it's part of the Chagas Micha, which talk about the glorious century-long history of the Yeshiva, more than a century of the Yeshiva. So we have great Rashi Yeshiva going back to early generations. So you're familiar with the name of Shlomo Palachek? Yeah, so Shlomo Palachek was a Talmud of Reb Chaim Brisker, so the Talmud of the Soloveitchik's grandfather, and he was known as the Mechit or Eloi the Mechit. And it's not my place to judge, but I have to say, like, you know, Kishmo came from, like, the Eloi was not given out easily, because they have a sefer of his Chidushim, Chidushi HaEloi the Mechit. And whenever I look there, I really see, like, wow, he always kind of paradigm shift. He always reorients your perspective on the sugya in a whole different way. So he has a long piece on the topic of Chazaka by Hezek Riya in this paper. And I'm not going to try to share it all with you, but just one point that itself is a little bit emblematic of all kind of paradigm shift. So he discusses this question, he discusses the riff, he says, so why the rush? So why would it be that the chazaka shouldn't help to get rid of the obligation of the law? Why would it be that if you have a hezek or iya premise, so the law is still going to be obligatory anyway? Right, so if somebody is being mazik somebody else, but the other guy is okay with it, so let him be okay with it. So he has a completely different understanding. And he says that the obligation of building a wall does not necessarily come from the fact that I am Mazik you. I'm looking at you and you want me to stop, I should hit a wall. So that is not necessarily the cause of the obligation. The fact that I'm looking at you and I have a responsibility to respect your privacy and to minimize the impact I have looking at you, that's not necessarily what we mean when we say hezek riyosh mehezek can you the law. Rather, what does it mean? Okay, it's a paradigm shift. It all comes as a reflection of the obligation of the nizak to protect himself. Now, we have said that there is, in general, some kind of a balance back and forth between what, if we assume hezek riyah is a factor, but still, whose responsibility is it to stop it from happening? When is it the responsibility of the looker, and when is it the responsibility of the lookee? So he suggests that what this din is telling us is that the obligation is on the lookee to protect himself from being looked at. And that's what creates an obligation that is there regardless of minig or of chazak. So what could you ask about that? That's what I was nodding before.
Then why is it the person looking at the thing?
Okay, well, first of all, he doesn't exclusively have to pay.
No,
because
but if the thing is on him, how hard does he get?
Well, because it's both directions. They're all looking at each other, right? So they share the obligation. Right here we're talking about, Hezekiah has a lot of fat ramifications, but in this case we're talking about the wall. Right? So the wall between the two, so each one is looking at the other. And we could have thought, we did think until now, that each one has a responsibility to reduce how much he's looking at the other guy, and to say, well, I'll close my eyes all the time is not reasonable. So each one has a responsibility to create a scenario where he's not impacting on the other guy so much. And if that's the case, so what does that, so how does that play into things? So what he's saying here is that it's not about my responsibility not to look at you, it's about my responsibility not to leave it to chance, but to protect myself from being looked at by you. Max?
So does that change the paradigm by which, from a fewer way, because it's a little bit more subjective now, it's not a matter of I'm putting somebody else, it's a matter of...
Well, you would think, so that's what you still have to explain, that you would think that that should change it completely, right? So fuck all my problem. I shouldn't expose myself to being seen. What if I don't care? And so what if I say, I don't care about people seeing me. So you build the wall yourself. I'm not going to be involved because I don't care if you see me or not.
Where the other guy gets the ability to claim that you don't care?
Let's say you come to me. Right? We've lived next to each other for a while. And you come to me and you say, okay, that's time we build a wall. And I say that, I don't think I need it. You want to build a wall, you pay for it yourself, do it all on your property, you build a wall, I don't really care. So all the more so, if the real obligation I have to build a wall is to protect myself from being seen by you, so then why can't I just say, I don't care? Well, the more so you would think. So here, again, the Uyishness says itself, says the reality of Hezek or Iyash May Hezek means I'm not believed to say I don't care. Meaning what? Meaning that we have a din, the Gemara is going to tell us a little bit later on, that let's say somebody decides to build, you share space, you join somebody else's property, and they decide to build a wall that benefits you also while it benefits them, and build it on three sides. And it's benefiting you, but you didn't ask for the wall. But then you finish it off so that it benefits you in an objective way. So then you have to share in the expenses. So here, when I claim I don't care, and you say, oh, yes, you do, and you're hell, you're paying for half of the wall. So I'm not believed to say that I don't care. Because the reality is, hezek shmei, hezek r'iyah shmei hezek. You're not. We can walk with each other, maybe. You know, that's the Rashi goes on to say that if we both decide together, we want to be mochel. But I can't be mochel your hezek r'iyah to get myself out of having to pay. And so basically, he's saying that you can make me share the cost, even though the cost is for my benefit. And I might claim that I don't want the benefit, so leave me out of it. No, I can't do that because it's objectively a benefit. So the same way, I can't say, I don't want to pay for the fire department. I don't want to pay taxes for the fire department, the police department. I think I'm okay without it. I'll take my chances. Now, we don't let you say that. We say that every normal person who's part of the town wants there to be a fire department and needs there to be a fire department. And we all contribute to the taxes for that purpose. So too, it becomes the reality that we're all expected to pay for it. So, this also connects to a question we've mentioned from day one, that there are different concepts flying around in Bava Basra and the larger Nezikin Masechta, going back to Bava Kama. And we weren't sure what kind of concept Hezek R'iyah is. Is Hezek R'iyah basically a din in not hurting your neighbor, which is the topic of a lot of the second parak? Or is it about shared expenses, which is the topic of a lot of the second part of the first part? And we said that, for example, the din that you all have to chip in for a gate for the chatzar, which is not about protecting yourself from the neighbor, but about protecting yourself from the outside. So there, that's a shared expense. So the chiddush here is, that is the major theory line, that this is a shared expense. That we all want to be protected from people looking at us. So don't you tell me that you don't care. I know you do care. That it's a basic human need. And you can't come and say, nah, I'm fine with it. You'll build a wall by yourself. Even though it's for your benefit. But that's the impact of saying, hezek r'iyah shmei hezek. Very fascinating paradigm shift. All right.
Sharing of expenses,
my understanding is that expenses are communal needs. You have to be a part. Right. By law of neighbors, why would you not integrate this to be a part? Well, you do. It just comes from a different reason. That basically, among, let's say, the first two problems of Bava Basra, we have different kinds of concepts. So in the second paragraph, the Gemara is going to tell you that if you live next to somebody, you might impact on their well-being. And therefore, you have rules to say how you have to make sure not to impact on their well-being. So if you're going to have smoke blowing out of your chimney, or if you're going to have odors that are coming out of the house, so then that could impact negatively on your neighbor, and you have an obligation to conduct your business in a way that doesn't do that. So you could say, hezek r'iyah is like that, that if you're going to build your house so close to mine, so then you're imposing on me with your spying. And the same way you have an obligation not to blow smoke onto my property, you also have an obligation not to be spying onto my property. So maybe the din of the wall is about that. Or maybe it's not about that. It's that everybody who happens to share a communal context should also share in what the community needs. So the whole community needs protection from outsiders, not just from the insiders, but from the outsiders. The whole community needs water and needs fire departments and needs all those kind of things and needs a shul. So everyone who's there should participate in that. So maybe the idea is that building a wall between people is that that's to benefit the internal resident, that I want a wall to benefit me. And therefore, I'm obligated to recognize that the wall that's there helps me, and therefore I should pay for it. So it's coming from literally the other side of the fence, right? We thought that I have to build a wall to stop myself from looking at you. And what he's suggesting is, no, I have to pay for the wall because the wall benefits me. And therefore, I am obligated to pay for what benefits me. And I can't claim I don't care because it's simply a reality that transcends whatever we might claim about ourselves. Now, oh, that's a great question. So presumably they differ. Each case has its own facts. But it's also good to go back to the Cypress perspective that it's about whether it's personal or monetary. So he suggests, he doesn't conclude like this because he doesn't think the source is necessarily actually sustaining it, but it's interesting to note that the distinction between the Gina and the Chaser that the Mishnah mentions, which may not be a Leva d'Hochma, so we may not necessarily actually reflect that difference, right? But in the Mishnah, it sounds like, you know, the Chaser is one thing, and the Gina is more dependent on Minig. But it could be that that's only according to Hezek Riyah Lav Shmei Hezek. May not actually reflect what we actually conclude. But he considers the possibility of the stipler that maybe once we've seen there are different kinds of Hezek Riyah, so they're not all equally applicable. That it could be that things that affect my living space, my residence, so that's subject to the more personal kind of hezek riyah, and that should not be susceptible to mechila, binding mechila. While the context of, let's say, the gina, maybe that's more of a business-specific kind of context. That, okay, I do business out in those fields, in the garden, but that's a monetary issue. So if we come to a mutual agreement of how things are to be conducted, so then maybe that should have a different rule. So that itself, just there are many other cases I agree that are certainly also going to be subject to variables, but even just within the case of the Mishnah. So that might be reflective of that particular difference. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? Okay, so, sorry, it's actually... Not a time looking at thoughts. So there's another. Okay, so Baz Hashem, tomorrow we'll try to add a little bit more and then move into a Chazara phase. So just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we saw that the question of whether Chazak, well, first of all, that knowledge of Chazak could mean a lot of different things. It could mean a proof of an agreement. It could mean just the creation of an agreement itself. That's not 100% clear what kind we're talking about, but there are many different usages, and that the question of whether there is chazakah for this hezekri, at least the wall between two neighbors, is the question. The Rush indicates that it shouldn't be, and the Riff also. The Rush sounds like it's more because just not meaningful, the fact that I haven't said anything because of various reasons, but also the factor of the ongoing reality of the hezekri, as the Riff highlights. And as the Ramban also interprets within the Riff, and the Stipler and many others, the Stipler recommends as a good source to look at, suggests that the issue is whether it's personal or monetary, and mentioned the parallel to Purim and to Hezek in the context of Purim, and whether it's only Momonos or also Rufo, and that should be the issue. And the Matrix or Eloy in his Sefer has a complete inversion of the whole perspective here, that we would have thought that I have to build a wall to keep me from looking at you, but maybe no, I have to build a wall to protect myself from being looked at by you. So if that's the case, you think, well, the more so, I should be able to opt out. But no, the reality of Hezek Riyah is that I'm not believed to opt out. That if, when you want to build a wall, and I say, well, I'm not paying for it because I don't care, I can live without it, you say, no, it's not true, you can't live without it because Hezek Riyah is objectively a thing. So even if you claim you can live without it, you are benefiting from it in a real way, whether you acknowledge it or not, and therefore you are obligated to pay. Okay, so a lot more to try to fill in. We'll do as much as we can tomorrow, and hopefully we'll...